You are listening to the Screenfish Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week on the show, we take a trip to Wakanda to talk about Black Panther, the latest entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Welcoming back Chris Utley and Arnaldo Reyes, we get to talk about the film's importance and the power of telling one's own stories. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to the podcast. We are very excited this week to talk about one of the biggest films in is saying history too much. I don't know if it is, but it certainly made huge waves this year and beyond. This is Marvel's Black Panther, and this week we have our merry band, if you will, Chris Utley and Arnaldo Reyes. Welcome back, guys. Love chatting with you.
Wakanda forever.
We jumped right in on that one.
The Latino guy says it over the black dude. I love it. Kind of party tonight.
Before we record, we should say that if you are one of the five people in North America that hasn't seen Black Panther, that we are going to be using many, many spoilers as we talk about this film, because there's a whole lot we can chat about with Marvel's latest juggernaut, if you will. But be aware that this is going to be spoiler heavy. So feel free to watch the film, come back if that's an issue. But either way, guys, let's get right into it. I really want to know how you felt about Black Panther.
Or MCU in general. Black Panther was amazing. I think it has the Marvel formula, but it was also in and of itself a whole other animal, so to speak. And what I love about the film is Marvel Studios does a great job in this, and Black Panther took what they do great and put it on a whole nother level, is that not only is the star phenomenal in this film, but his supporting cast is, bar none, the best supporting cast in a superhero film, let alone in a Marvel film, let alone a superhero film that I've ever seen. And that speaks volumes to the story, to what it was. And as I'm not surprised with how great a reaction it is, because you have Black Panther is a perfect recipe. You have the Marvel fans, you have the superhero fans, and you have the support from the black community, because finally you get something. And I know with you guys, I shared the little comedy thing, but it's true. You get a film about a black hero, and he's not stereotyped into a gangster, a dope dealer, or, you know, a thug, or anything like that. It's just, it's allowed to just be a great character, that a movie that has great effects, great storytelling, great cast, and finally, a villain that challenges Loki for the best villain in the Marvel Universe.
Okay. Yeah, I want to talk about that. but that's another story. Okay, so we'll come back to that, because I want to talk about that. I've heard a lot of people say that about Killmonger. I have to agree. I mean, this is definitely one of the best films in the Marvel Universe. It certainly is, because though this film has an incredible cast, it really, truly does. I like the fact that you talked about the supporting characters, because there were so many characters on screen at any different time that I actually appreciated watching. There weren't many places where I felt the movie dovetailed, and I'm just talking strictly as a film. But I will say this, and this is obviously not putting too fine a point on it, because everybody is saying this already. This is, to me, what set this movie apart, was this is the first Marvel movie that felt important. You know, a lot of the Marvel movies have caught my attention. They've interested me. I've even liked them. Although I will admit, since I've been going back and doing these Marvel podcasts, I'm realizing how few of them I actually liked as much as I remember liking. But this one is the first one that really sets itself up as an important film that is bigger than just a popcorn flick. And I think that's obviously key to it. There's a lot, and the script is really, really good. It's a really interesting movie. And I know that sounds really lame to describe it that way, but it held my interest. It was a very interesting story. There was lots of characters I liked and I thought were more complex than in other entries into the MCU. But the film itself almost has taken on a bigger stance, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I want to hear what Chris has to say.
So I'm sitting in the theater, Cinemark West Plano 29 or whatever the thing is in their XD Atmos room. Dolby Atmos, big ginormous screens. I go big or I go home. They get to the river where T'Challa is getting ready to be crowned and ultimately challenged by Mbuku as king, and the drums are going, and they're doing their Wakandan rhythmic dance. I turned to my wife, and I said, if this ain't the blackest thing you've ever seen in your life. And I'm sitting here watching that whole entire sequence. And as I said in what I wrote in Screenfish, I'm like, this is the essence and spirit of who we are as a people. If our riches, the minerals, and the people of the continent of Africa had not been fleeced, had we not been brought over by change, this is a glimpse of what we could have become. And I just stood there with my jaw on the floor for the whole 2 hours and 15, 20 minutes, or however long the movie is, just in sheer awe and just absolute overjoyment of what I'm seeing, which is why I had you guys go first, because I'm still struggling to put it all in the words, just what in the world we watched.
I mean, obviously we talk in chats and stuff, but, you know, anyone listening that has not read Chris's article, it's a great article, a great take, you know. I 100% agree to the most part. Me being Latino, but from Caribbean descent, Dominican Republic, a huge factor of our ancestry comes from Africa, and a lot of the influences that you would find in Dominican Republic is a mixture of African, Spaniard, and French culture. And so I agree that scene when T'Challa's is...
I mean, you know, Angela Bassett there.
Yeah.
There's all these different tribes, the authenticity. I sound stupid as a black person, but I don't even know what that thing is with the ornaments in the mouth. You stretch that out, the guy with the green thing, you know. It's just all shapes, all sizes, all colors, all everything. It's just rich and vibrant on the edge of that cliff, but you're just like,
it gives you chills. It's nothing but chills when you just see the joy. And I like that you bring out the vibrant, the colors. Like, it's just, that's the scene. It just screams joy. Even when M'Baku comes out and you know, okay, this is the adversary.
Even, like,
it's awesome.
You know, I don't remember what he said. But yeah, when they came out, even in the challenge, all of that, and, you know, just the honor of it, and, you know.
And Frank, I'll go back to the comic side just for a little bit, because, you know, one thing I've always loved about Marvel Comics is that what separates them is the ability to Stan Lee recognized early on that characters that relate with the normal person is important. And I think the best creations Stan Lee ever created, outside of, you know, Spider-Man, who's a billion-dollar franchise is characters like Black Panther and the X-Men. Characters that, you know, if you're not white and blue-eyed, these characters you can relate to, even the ones that are white and blue-eyed, because in sense, essentially, they're the minorities of the Marvel Universe. So you understand the things that they go through and the things that they, you know, have to do to be above the rest. And obviously, when he created Black Panther, it was during the time of the Black Panthers. And, you know, but Stan Lee recognized the importance that creating characters for everybody and that everybody can relate to is essential to storytelling. And what Black Panther movie reiterates to Hollywood is that films like this are not taboo. They're not, they make money. Films like this, even, you know, if you go back to films where, you know, I was reading, I think it was a Forbes article where, you know, you can go back to Eddie Murphy films like Coming to America or Dr. Dolittle. Just, you know, continue going it. You know, Black actors, minority actors are great. These films make money. Get Out, Get Out. You know, it shocked a lot of people, but, you know, it's...
Don't go there. You know where I'm going. It wasn't yet. Black Panther, that was Get Out 2 years in a row. Black people in February. What?
But what I'm saying is that films like that shouldn't be a surprise to Hollywood. It should be the norm. This is the norm. If you get away from the stereotypes and just let creators create the way they can, instead of thinking that films only to stereotypes and to, you know, you don't have to fit it into a certain culture. Black Panther proves that you can reach a certain culture and different fan bases all at once and still make a great film. You know, that's obviously we're getting into the historic part of the film, but that's what it is. Great storytelling trumps anything.
Yeah, it's...
Figure that it's a 31-year-old Black man on his third film. And it's that level of budget, and that's what he put out. Dude, Ryan Coogler is going to write his own ticket for the rest of his life. He can pretty make much, a movie yeah. about two people sitting on a bus stop for 3 hours. Black people can't. Most of the lot of white folks do. We'll go. That's a $50 million opening just because of his name. Oh, Black Panther director? Oh, I'm going to see that. Even yep. if it's whack.
It'll have to have Michael B. Jordan in it, though, because that's...
Of course, that's his music.
Michael B. Jordan, I gotta give him credit because from when he first started to, you know, what he's been doing lately, the guy has evolved as an actor. I know you said you were going to get to this, but I think that Killmonger did a great job as a villain. And this is where I told Chris, you know, on his article, the one thing that I have a rebuttal with.
Here we go.
And I agree with, had Africans been allowed to do and not be fleeced, even though Wakanda and Vibranium is all fictional. I was looking at Killmonger and I'm like, dude, if Wakanda was real and they pop up out of nowhere, I'd be just as pissed as Killmonger. I'd be like, wait a minute. You guys had the ability to stop all this and you never did? I'd be heated. I'd be like, no, don't come with your stuff now. I was like, you should have came and took responsibility years ago and helped the brother out.
And you know what? I agree with you 100%.
But I'll get to the topic, and it's where I come with the not really a rebuttal, but this is what I got from it. I saw the same things you did in that, but then I also saw, I think it was, and Baku reminded me also why Africa got fleeced. And it's, you know, brothers betraying brothers. The minute M'Baku saw an
opportunity. There you go. I got you. Historical note for all of those who may not know. Even though our ancestors were brought over in chains, those on the native land had a lot to do with that. If you go back and study the triangle trade.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that was a three-way swap. It's like,
yep. The opportunity.
They got resources, they got money, and our ancestors got molasses. So we got sold out and put in them chains because they had a sweet tooth. History is what it is.
Exactly. And I think Kugler put that in the film when it's not in Baku, but I forget his name that turned and took Killmonger's side. It was like, this is your brother. Like,
he's
satisfied with the fact that Claw was dead and been like, okay, my family is redeemed. But instead, he saw the opportunity for power and decided to turn on his brothers that he grew up with, was a complete stranger, just for that opportunity for power. And you know, it's one of those things where we learn, you know, power, it doesn't matter who you are, power corrupts.
Yeah, you're referencing Daniel Kaluuya's character,
Wakabi. It's Wakabi.
Yes.
Was it him or Njobu? Was it Wakabi or Njobu? I forget.
Wakabi.
Okay.
I'm Wakabi. On IMDb right now. So.
Okay. Well, no, I know. I just couldn't remember which character it was. I saw it late at night, so I'm trying to remember.
I think Njobu was Killmonger's dad.
Oh, yeah, you're right. My mistake. Yeah, absolutely.
Played by Emmy Award winning
Sterling K. Brown. Yeah, you're right.
When I saw that scene, I knew Kugler put that in there for a reminder. It's like, this is what we could have been, but here's a reminder. Power corrupts, you know, and that opportunity, you know, and it gives you that sense of what sin is like. Hmm. You know, he got a little faith and he wanted more of that fruit.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Killmonger, I want to go back to Killmonger here because I loved his storyline and I thought he was, everybody's talking about him as, some people are saying he's better than Loki. And I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah. Well, but I'll tell you the issue.
The pantheon of MCU villains. Yeah, he's number two.
Well, yeah, we just did our episode for Thor the Dark World and I had to watch Malekith the Boring. And I realized that they're all, most of them are cookie cutter villains. But so I think he's
whack. The Mandarin was a ruse. Ultron with all that hype. It was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the one like Red Skull was.
Like there haven't been a lot of memorable ones.
Loki and Killmonger have in common is that they're both dynamic characters. Like you understand their agenda and their motives, and you can actually, in a way, relate with their motives. Like Ultron's motive, I can't relate with that. The fake Mandarin, that was just whatever. But like,
they're also both abandoned sons.
Exactly.
For a father.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, actually. I hadn't thought of that. You're right. Yeah, I thought, obviously. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that's why I liked Killmonger. Like, besides the fact that, you know, his agenda actually made sense, it was the whole essence that I go back to saying, if Wakanda would show up today, I'd be mad at them. I was like, I'm looking at him like, I don't blame you. I'd be mad at them.
Yeah. No, you know what? I thought he was the most understandable villain in the MCU. I was on board with his motivation more than I was even with Loki's, because even Loki's is okay, well, you kind of lied to me, but then he goes off and tries to take over the Earth and it kind of goes from there.
But you understand Loki because you're like, you wash away Loki because you're like, well, you're the god of mischief. So
that's right. But I think my issue, and like I said, I want to see it again, but I just thought that sometimes, like in terms of the dialogue, I wanted better dialogue from Killmonger. Like, that was the issue for me, and that's really petty, because the villain himself, I was right on board with. The performance, I was right on board with. But there were sometimes the dialogue took me out of it. But I don't know. That's just me. That's just me. Like, he was awesome. He was really, really cool.
Give me an example, please.
Oh, jeez. Okay. I didn't take notes.
I just want to follow along with you.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember.
Give you a good point. A counterpoint.
You know what? You know what it was. You know what it was. This it's funny because I actually don't have a problem with this. So maybe this is it. Maybe it's just that I need to accept the thing that I don't have a problem with. Is the fact that because he comes from a different world, the way he spoke was different than everyone else. If that makes any sense. But he's from where? Not New Jersey. Where is he from? He's from L.A. Oakland. Yeah, he's from Oakland.
Home of the real life Black Panthers.
Of course. Understandable. So it made sense. There was just sometimes, because everybody else was speaking with a certain flow to their language, his was jarring to me. But I understood it because he was from Oakland. So I don't know. It's petty. I told you it was petty. But it was just one of the things that sort of took me out of it. He was awesome. He was great. I loved the guy, and I loved his role. You know, it's interesting. You know, we talk about the film itself. One of the things I'm trying to work this out. I want to write a thing for the site. But one of the things we're seeing with this film, and I think I'm going to compare it to Wonder Woman last year, is I think we're expecting different things from our heroes now than we did. You know, when I going back and watching the old MCU movies, we wanted people that were really about it. It was very introspective. It's like, I have a problem. It was more about them and their individual problems. When you look at the way that Wonder Woman and Black Panther have taken off, it's really been about our culture and a call to something bigger.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'll take this ball and run with you.
Go for it.
Yep. So if you go back and look at the pantheon of superhero movies, you've got Christopher Reeve, of course. Superman comes on the scene, and there's no question, there's no dialogue about should I be a hero or should it just be, you know, not until you get Superman 2 anyway.
Right.
Superman just immediately takes upon the situation and you just come in and save the world, so no questions asked, and you get a derivative of that in Batman 2. But starting with the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man, you get the mopey, conflicted superhero who's, I have this gift, but I really don't want to use this gift, and what's my purpose, and this, that, and the other. It's like they're fighting their own heroism, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you see that, again, Spider-Man. You see that sort of kind of Dark Knight, but in all these other superheroes, stories, even Arnaldo's favorite, you know, Hugh Jackman's interpretation of Wolverine. It's all about anti-hero.
You mean the best superhero actor of all time? Sorry, go ahead.
All right. but you've got the anti-hero superhero. So
yeah.
That's the wrong word, because anti-hero means like they're rebellious because they want to be. But just this mopey, full of angst. You know, Keanu is neat as Neo. So many just who does not want to step into their role. Here comes Wonder Woman. There's no conflict. There's a battle going on. I'm just going to step in and do what I got to do. And now you got the fabulous Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa. There's no angst about that. Even when in a moment where he has a choice of whether he's going to live or die after he loses the battle with Killmonger. And he goes and speaks to the ancestors and he rebukes his ancestors, which is cold in and of itself. You say, you know what? And they're saying, no, come on, take your place. It's your time. It's like, no, there's a whole world out there. They need me. They need us. They need what we bring to the table. My time is not done. I'm going back out there to do what I got to do. And that's powerful. And that's the kind of hero that we need to see in the society. So later with all this angsty in my feelings, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. It's like, come on, take charge, grab the football, run that puppy into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what so many folks are embracing about him. Had he been mopey and he just wanted to go off to the distant other side of the island with Nakia and just be a king on his throne and not be bothered. That would have cheapened the whole experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you went back and cited Superman. That was a hero for a different age. Like you said, when he started, it was sort of like he was still sort of calling everybody to something bigger. But then everybody just got real. It shifted. I mean, our cultural shifted to focusing on characters like Batman. And all of a sudden, it's all about, you know, the darkness within. But I, you know, when I look at a film like this, its representation is just amazing. One of the things I thought that I liked about this one so much, and this may sound odd to you, I don't know, but I mean, when we're introduced to Black Panther in Civil War, he puts him, they introduce him in pretty much the same world that every other hero is in. You know, he's in every MCU movie pretty well, with a few exceptions, take place in major cities and all this stuff. But this actually takes you into a different world that's in our world and lets it be itself. And it's a different world with different rules. And it celebrates it. It doesn't hold it down. It actually says this is important and this is a valuable thing. And it sort of it brings such life to a different space, which I thought was amazing. Obviously, we know we're talking like it's Wakanda's in Africa, but I love the when you talk about all the tribes are there and it's just bright. I love that. I thought that was incredible. It's so beautiful to see.
And I agree. I agree with both of you. What I liked about the film, and I mean, I will continue to say that I think Wonder Woman was a little bit overhyped, but I understand the difference. I understand the difference in the character of, you know, just wanting to do the right thing, and just getting the job done. I think with Black Panther, You get the same thing, and I love that you brought up that ancestral plane, because I think that was a huge turning point, not just for the movie itself, obviously that was leading into the climax, but about where Black Panther is going in the future, and about, you know, just us and life in general. Wonder Woman did a good job with that too. Black Panther did a better job, You know, I'll go with the Star Wars Last Jedi reference. Let the past die.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, Black Panther, he could have just gave up and he said, no. He's looking at, even at a father, he goes, no, father, the sins that you made, sins that your fathers before you, we can't continue that same road. At some point, we have to break that cycle and we have to take another road. And I'm not gonna sit here and let that road lead to us being worse than the people we were trying to protect vibranium from to begin with. And it was just like, you know, what Killmonger wanted to do was be exactly like the people he hated. His idea to fix things was to be the people that he hated. T'Challa realized, and let's just say, going through just, you know, people's, you know, reactions to the film, Nakia needs to get a lot more credit. Like, everyone, Okoye. Yeah. Okoye was great. Michonne, you're awesome. But Nakia was...
Don't leave Shuri hanging. Shuri is a freaking Disney princess, dude.
I'll get to Shuri. But Nakia was, you know, when they say behind every great man is a great woman?
Mm-hmm.
That was Nakia. Because Black Panther, it was her who got the flower. It was her who lifted him to a new level.
She got the herb when Killmonger tried to burn all of them down.
And it was her who convinced T'Challa who put the seed in T'Challa's head that you need to, as king, you can write your own story. And you don't have, there's people out there that need Wakanda's help, and Wakanda can help and defend itself all at the same time. And then, like you were saying, Shuri, Tony Stark, you ain't the smartest person in the MCU. Shuri can outthink you with her pinky. Like, this young girl killed it and showed. And that's what I think the film did great. It showed a great king, a great leader. It showed
Shuri's in Infinity War. Did you know that?
They all are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, in the, I got to tease the post credit scene. It's spoiler room. You should have seen the movie. But I can't wait to see when some remnant Hydra agent, or maybe Thanos and all his quote-unquote wisdom, tries to get Bucky back in the Winter Soldier mode by reading the...
Ugh, they can have Bucky. Bucky's the most boring character in the MCU. I'm sorry, guys.
But nah, you missed that. But the post-credits sequence number two, like I said, I'm waiting for them to try to hit him with the little mojo by getting those code words at him. And then I want to see how... I can't wait for the fight scene in which he resists that, because Shuri has obviously healed him and cured him from that. That's what I'm looking forward to.
To be honest, I don't think that's even a factor, and it's going to be in there. I
hope so, just for my own fanboy benefit.
No, yeah, I understand, but it's something that Thanos wouldn't even know about. Like, they... Somewhere in Wakanda is the one stone, and we're going to be war now. So somewhere in Wakanda is the one stone that you get to see in the Marvel universe.
You mean the Soul Stone?
I think it's been right underneath our nose the whole time. I think it is the vibranium.
I think it's the Soul Stone, and that's how they can connect with their ancestors.
Yeah, I think
it's what.
I said
somewhere with the vibranium, Steve, that's a great point. It's how they can connect with their ancestors, the Soul Stone. That makes a great
point. The herb.
How they make that work and everything, and that's why. I mean, we see it in the trailer. I think it's Black Dwarf and Thanos' army that comes to Wakanda. So I don't think Thanos has any clue of what Bucky is. It's just, get me my last stone. So they're gonna, and I think that's the importance also. And you think of the kings, of their fear of opening who they are to the world, because now people know who you are. So when Thanos comes, now he knows where to go.
Yeah, I think it's connected in that way. And you know, going back to the women, I thought the women were the best part of the movie, personally. I mean, I actually found their characters were the ones that I was most engaged with. I thought, just because the cast was so good. You talk about the strong supporting cast. The strength of the female characters in this film was superior to pretty much any of the other, forget the Marvel movies, most other action films in general. I thought they were just incredible.
No, I was gonna say that's one of my favorite scenes. Did he freeze like an antelope in headlights? Oh man! I just look at that scene. I'm like, yep, that's every guy when they see the one girl that they love. And you, no matter how smooth you are, you see that one girl, you're like,
yep. Out of pocket. Never failed.
I want to talk a bit about T'Challa. We haven't talked about him specifically much. I mean, Chadwick Boseman's great, but what did you think of his motivation? I mean, we've talked a bit about Killmonger, who, you know, is sort of, you know, is justified by his, you know, motivation. But T'Challa really seems to hold to his ancestral history and doesn't want to share the resources, which helps create it. I was wondering what you guys thought about that. That seems like it's a pretty complex thing for the hero to wrestle with.
I think, I was going to say earlier, I think T'Challa and the female, what makes the film great is, one, you see him as a great king And you realize he was that before he even was crowned it. And then he's surrounded by, you know, great supporting cast and Doug. And I go back to the ancestral plane where his father told him, you know, surround yourself with people you trust the most. And that's exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. He surrounded himself, and his most trusted people were his family, the women in his life that have a strength that couldn't be broken by anything. And then when his dad told him, it is hard for a good man to be king. We understood right there the sin of his father. His father was willing to do bad things to remain hidden. And T'Challa had understood that, you know, being good trumps being hidden. And I automatically thought of Dr. King and was like, when good men see evil and do nothing, they're just as bad. I off the top of my head, I don't remember the exact quote, but
yeah,
you guys know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Another one.
When this film, it reminded me of that so much, because what I saw was T'Challa realize, you know, he realized that being good, it's going to be tough for him, but then because of his supporting, because his inner strength to stand up and tell his ancestors, no, I'm going to be different and I'm going to write a different path, shows that he recognizes that you can't just see bad things happening and not do nothing. You know, you have to do what you can, and if it means putting yourself at risk, you have to trust those people beside you that tell you, we are strong enough to do both.
Yeah, I agree. Chris, what do you think?
All I do about T'Challa, as I said, and what I wrote, is he realizes, like Ronaldo just said, that he can use his kingdom and Wakanda's resources to be a light to the world. He was terrified of what would happen, of what might happen, should the beauty and richness of Wakanda gotten to the wrong hands, to the real life Ulysses Crowell of the world. But he recognizes that by the end of this cinematic journey, it's time for us to come out of the darkness and into the light. And the humility that he expressed in coming to that, really his humility and his gracefulness for the whole entire movie, again, that's just captivating. Now you have juxtapose that against Thor, another heir to the throne. His father was alive, and Thor's a hothead, you know. He gets banished to Earth and has to, you know, sacrifice himself in order to prove himself worthy of Mjolnir, his hammer. Which, in a Thor movie, I don't think he earned that at all. I'm being real, it's like, that's all he did, he get his hammer back. Like, okay, there was nothing noble in that. There was nothing heroic about that, really. Everything you see in T'Challa just reeks of nobleness and regalness and all these great virtues that we love to see in our heroes. It's hard to find the flaw, really. Say his only flaw that was displayed was that he was not strong and vicious enough to take down Killmonger.
Yeah.
And when you really get down to that, that's almost a Christ allegory anyway. Because it's not that T'Challa willfully lays his life down, but he ends up taking the fall for something that's not his own fault. And he's thrown off that cliff. It's symbolizing his own death and burial, so to speak. And in that snow, he rises again. He shows up and he's like, okay, the battle is not over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I liked about that whole conversation is that in some way he wasn't wrong. I don't mean T'Challa, and I mean his father, because I look at the fear of protecting his nation.
You've got two characters from the outside world, really. You've got Claw. I mean, I'm not counting Killmonger here. You've got Claw, and you've got Martin Freeman's character. What's his name?
Special Agent Ross.
And with Claw, he absolutely wants the resources. He's pillaging the resources because he can. So the idea of hiding one's resources to protect your people is validated here. Like, we can see evidence of it. So there are people out there, of course, that are trying to that don't care about their way of life and would just take what they could. I actually really liked Ross's character arc in the film, because
colonizer.
He is. He's a colonizer. And they talk to him about, they're talking to him about Wakanda. He's like, oh, there's a third world nation. There's nothing that we want there, or there's nothing happening there. And they're like, well, you don't know us. You don't know what's going on. Yes, I do. We know all about you. And then as he wakes up there and he sees what's going on, he doesn't.
Wakanda? No, it's Kansas.
Yeah. Poor Kansas, man. Kansas got bad rap. No, but he doesn't see it for a place that can be stolen from. He sees it as a place to be celebrated by the end of the film, and supported. And I thought that was so beautiful. I actually really liked that arc. Because when he buries his assumptions and just actually, hears the voices of the people, sees their culture, and sees the just amazing value in everything that's going on, he is changed. And he sees it beyond vibranium and glowing purple flowers of some nature. He sees it beyond all that stuff and the technology. Simulated
fighter jets.
And simulated. That was so awesome. I love that thing.
the simulated cars. Yeah.
That was pretty great.
Just piggybacking on you.
Go.
I think Ross, beforehand, when he talked about Wakanda, you had the mentality of what Chris spoke about 400 years ago and
yes.
all that, or even before that, but you have the mentality of there's nothing for us to take. Like, there's nothing for it, that natural Western mentality, or colonizer mentality is. There's nothing there for me to pillage.
Yeah, they're useless to me.
To the end of the film is instead of what can I take from you, it became, man, what can you do for me? Like, now you're like,
yeah.
You're like, I'm it's not necessarily I'm at your mercy, but I am in awe of who you are. And I think we noticed that in Ross.
Now juxtapose that with what the UN guy said in post-credit scene number one.
Yeah.
What is his line? I missed it. He said something and they look at each other
A bunch of soldiers, not soldiers, but.
No, farmers.
Farmers.
Right.
So the rest of the world, and then they all look at each other.
Yeah, share with the rest of the world.
Yeah, and they're like, you don't know what I have, dude.
But see, that was one of the things I thought was really I loved about this movie is it really emphasizes the fact of humbling yourself with a culture, with any culture. And humbly, going back to Wonder Woman point, forget what I said there about Wonder Woman. But this particular, like, when this film takes a stage, it lets everything be something to be wondered at. Like, there's a real sense of wonder in this film. It's just, you're in awe of the beauty of things, and they sort of strip away your assumptions. But the film is very much about listening, one of the themes of the film is very much about listening to someone else and seeing who they are for who they are. And I loved that about it. That was one of the things I thought was really, really great.
I totally agree with that. And, it's one of the things that I was trying to look it up because a cousin of mine had posted something. And it goes towards what like what T'Challa was saying in that UN thing speech when he's talking about working
together. I got the quote right here, so we're ready for it.
But what I like, and I saw my cousin had posted something, and then it had said unity, not uniformity. And I think a lot of times, and how do I put this delicately? I really can't put it delicately. I have a lot of brothers and sisters in Christ that, you know, are not minorities. At some time, I think they, you know, at some point here in America is, you know, politics has taken over, you know, just Christ-likeness, but they come out of a movie like this, and it's all about, you know, right conservatism or leftness and liberal. And it's like, no, man, stop always thinking politics and come out of it. And just because someone talks about togetherness and working together doesn't mean they're saying they want to. You need to be the same. And I saw that quote, and I was like, and my cousin, he put unity, not uniformity, and God calls us to oneness, not sameness.
Yes.
Let us celebrate the diversity, tone, culture, worship expressions, and music styles. So we're called to oneness, not sameness. Let's unite, but we don't have to be uniform.
Yeah, see, that was...
The quote is, Wakanda will no longer watch from the shadows. We cannot, we must not. We will work to be an example of how we as brothers and sisters on this earth should treat each other. Now more than ever, the illusions of division threaten our very existence. We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges while the foolish build barriers.
Yep.
We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe.
Yeah, see, I love that, where the wise build bridges, the foolish build, not walls. What did you say? The foolish
barriers.
And I know what they meant.
Thinking walls.
Yeah. The Trump.
The time we're living in. Yeah, I'm saying it, I didn't.
Yeah, I did. I'm Canadian, I can say it.
Yes, you can.
But, see, this was something I was just talking about with some friends the other day. I said, if you look at the whole of Scripture... Like, the whole of Scripture, God's intent for humanity, the kingdom, is about coming together with Christ at the center. It's about diversity. Paul says there's no longer slave or free, Jew or Greek. He lists all the people because it's supposed to be about unity and coming together, which is a scary thing. You know, going back to T'Challa there, it is scary because there's openness there. And self-protection, and regardless of whether it's about resources or just about self-preservation, like, but really to come together and in unity without us being the same, I think is just such a beautiful, beautiful picture. And that's one thing. I loved that speech at the end. I absolutely loved that dialogue there. That was my favorite part. Not my favorite part, but it was my favorite dialogue.
There were so many good lines in this movie.
There were some great dialogue.
Yeah, Killmonger's final line. Yeah.
Which one is that?
My wife up.
Just bury me in the ocean with my ancestors that jumped from the ships because they knew death was better than bondage. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that messed Miss Utley up. She was done.
Did
she was driving home, she's like, what is that line again? That
Did you guys catch that the last battle takes place on a literal underground railroad?
No freaking way. Oh my God.
I did not think about that.
Oh my God.
I can't take credit. I saw that on Twitter.
Oh my God. Do. And the two dudes of African descent missed that.
You left it to the Canadian white kid, man. The Canadian white kid. How did I pick up on that? Come on.
Yeah, we get the prices right, Holmes, Red.
One thing I wanted to talk about too, guys, is the power of storytelling. Not just because of Coogler being of African American descent, but also because, like, it's a theme in the story. Like, there's about the passing on of stories. I was interested on how you thought that, of what you thought about the importance of being able to tell our own stories, whether it's nationality wise or whether it's just historically. What lies in that? What's the power of that to you?
Well, you colonizer on the market on that, because 90 to 95% of story told are your stories.
I'm not denying that. You know what's interesting? There's a quote for an interview that's gonna be up actually next week. I interviewed the guy who directed Fast and the Furious for his movie Hurricane Heist, Rob Cohen. And there's a quote that he makes that actually was really interesting to me. Because I asked him, I said, like, how did you get involved with this movie? And he said he was working on a movie about Jack Dempsey. He said, and as he was working on it, he realized he's not the person to tell that story as a white male, to tell the story of an African-American boxer. And he said, this is not the time in our culture for me to be telling this story. So he backed out of the project. I thought that was fascinating. I thought it was a bold move. I thought it was a good decision, but it was interesting. Patty Jenkins directing Wonder Woman.
The first thing I thought about was Michael Mann and his misguided and piss poor attempt to tell the Ali story.
Yeah, see, now if that movie was made today, he would not be the one signed on, right?
Nope.
It would be Ryan Coogler, and it would be Michael B. Jordan, but that's not.
But
somehow I got you.
I agree with you because I'm going to bring up two examples. First, because I come from the comics background, you know, when I actually had time to actually review comics, it's funny when we were at a different spot, I would get Christians that would send me comics to review, read my thing, and talk to different Christians. And the first thing that would come to mind is, who's your target audience?
Mm.
You know, and even just in comics general, like, you know, I've been to Comic-Con. You go to, I've been to panels where, you know, it's your black creators making, you know, comics. And they're trying to, you know, they want their comics to sell like a Spider-Man. And I'm like, what the problem is that who's your target audience? Hmm. You're making comics the same way Hollywood makes movies about black people.
Hmm.
You're sticking to stereotypes. And then the black characters in the major comics are being, it's the same problem that women in comics have, is you have white males telling stories about Latinos, telling stories about blacks, telling stories about women, and you aren't fit to tell those stories. I think recently one of the most popular Marvel characters that has come out is the younger Miss Marvel, who is of Muslim descent, and guess who Marvel got to write her stories? A Muslim writer, a female Muslim writer, and the book took off because she knows what she's talking about. She knows what she's relating to, and I think our responsibilities now, as even reviewers, parents, is, you know, demanding in a sense, you know, letting the younger generation, letting, you know. Comics is starting to get there where they're letting a multicultural group of people, they're giving more, you know, one of the my favorite panels in Comic-Con has always been women in Marvel, because it's all the women that work there, whether they're editors, writers, and things like that. And then there's a movie panel of just women in Hollywood. And the fact that we still have to have panels like this, and we can't just have panels of creators, and the fact that we still have to have panels of Latino creators or black creators, it speaks volumes of, you know, where we're still at as a society. And that the fact that people need to be surprised that Black Panther is doing so well. But I also think of, you know, Moana, animated film. I think of Coco that just came out. And I think of Black Panther, and you look at all three, and what did they stay true to? Is they stay true to the culture. They bring the people on that actually know what they're talking about. And in your sense, Steve, you know, like the director said, you know, they're the ones who are to tell that story, not someone else who's trying to tell a story. They have no clue what they're talking about.
Hmm.
And I think that's why you have the success of films like these. Even though Moana and Coco were animated films, they stay true to the culture that they represented, and that's what made them successful. Even the person that's not aware with that culture understood that it was real, that it wasn't a fake telling of that culture, that it actually was real. And you appreciate it, because at the end of the day, when you look at these different cultures and you strip, you know, anything else, and you're just looking at what the culture really is, there's an appreciation for it.
And not just as a novelty, like as someone who has a really authentic desire to tell the story. You know, it's like, oh, that's a really cool, like, that's a really cool story. Or I want to tell it like that. But no, this desire to speak from the heart of knowledge and experience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, were you going to say something? I thought I heard you were going to say something.
The only thing that I would say to that is to address the counterpoint that a lot of listeners may be saying, because a lot of our audience is probably, you know, I'm sure we're a diverse crowd, but we're in an era where for Reyes to make that statement and for me to agree about it, some folks might call us and accuse us of being reverse racist because of that. They would say, why can't a white person tell a uniquely African-American or Latino story? The only thing that I can respond to that is that my number one problem with Michael Mann's interpretation of Muhammad Ali's story. You get the beats right, you get the characters there, you work in MLK, you work in Malcolm X, and you do all this grandiose film work and this, that, and the other. But you're missing the soul.
Yeah.
When it comes down to certain characters, speaking of Coco, to live, I'm not Latino, but to live in that culture, and Reyes, you can speak to how much the whole Day of the Dead thing plays into it all, but there was just such a need to get that authentically, absolutely right, without whitewashing it, without watering it down, for them to lessen that stroke and to take that bite away, so to speak, would have denigrated the whole movie. Like, Black Panther in another director's hands probably would have been a good Marvel movie. Okay, I will go see this again. But it needed Ryan Coogler's voice in his struggle coming up from the streets of Oakland. I don't know if you read the story before, but he grew up in the hood, but his parents were determined to make sure that he didn't fall into those hood traps. And so they pushed education on him. They pushed higher heights, and he found his gifting in the world of film, you know. So you needed that essence. You needed all of that, the richness of the motherland, and again, that piece of Oakland where the real-life Black Panthers come from, dovetailing itself with Killmonger's story. And when you look at what the Panthers were really trying to do, they weren't a hate group. They were trying to make sure that people of color no longer had... They were trying to make sure that their kinsmen of color could not continue the oppression that was looked away, that was just rampant in the area. They had to take a stand to protect their brothers and sisters. And all of that is part of the unique richness of the Black story. Get to slavery, to Reconstruction, and then all the 40 acres and the mule and the right to vote is stripped away and replaced with Jim Crow. And then from the outpouring of the late 1960s into the 70s, there's a sense of Black pride, the afros, the fits, the, you know, dashikis, and the African garb moving into American culture, you know, and James Brown doing that anthem, say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. You need all that color. You need all that essence to really get a black story right. You gotta have it. You gotta have it.
Yeah.
Brian Coogler and the success of this film comes off the shoulders of what Spike Lee did in the 80s. This past week is the 30th anniversary of one of my favorite films of all time, Spike Lee's School Days. Which told the story of black college life, something that had never been seen before. Never, ever been seen. And that was such an impactful and such a huge change in my life. It guided my decision to go to the historically black college and university. But a white filmmaker, God bless their hearts and their great intentions, had they gone on the Morehouse's campus to try to tell that movie, it would not have been the same. The authenticity would not have been there.
Well, that makes total sense. And it makes sense because you speak from the story you know. If Scorsese makes Black Panther, even if he has all the same facts, even if he has the same story, the voice is different. I agree with that totally. I think it's a real celebration of diversity to have people telling diverse stories and to recognize that, hey, I don't come from this world or have this history in the same way. So recognition of that, I think, is so powerful. Even in the film, I thought it was really interesting, you know, this emphasis on the ancestors, and it opens like they're telling a story. Like it's the oral tradition. Here's our story. Here's how we came to be. This is who we are. And, I mean, for crying out loud.
That kind of threw me off how the film just started. It's like, Gringo Black, and then here goes young Eric's voice. How about, tell me where we come from. Oh, the movie started.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, like, for crying out loud, as Christians, we do that all the time. Every week we gather to what? Be told the story. A story that we've been invited to participate in. You know, no, I'm not a first century Jew, but the story of Scripture is so much bigger. It's in, for all cultures and across the board. But, I mean, there's power in knowing our story and being able to tell it. Like, Lady Bird or Get Out with a white male director totally changes their emphasis, their focus, and their honesty. You want to be authentic, you have to have the right to be able to tell your own story.
Exactly.
We've talked about the film here. Why don't you tell us some of your favorite parts? I know, obviously, we like the film, so I think it's fair to say this for this episode that it's three big screen hits. Am I right? Is that safe to say? I know.
Chris, you haven't screened it at this point. I mean, 4 days, what, 5-6 days, $277 million. It's like, what are you waiting on?
Well, I know, Chris, normally you would recommend we wait for Netflix to watch something like this, but I think we should see it in a theater. So
No. What I said was they took and we're going to the scenes, you know. It's definitely not a wait for Netflix. It's a theater.
Of course. I was just trying to get a rise out of Utley.
But what Chris misses that he doesn't watch on Netflix is that casino scene was a page right out of Marvel TV on Netflix when you're talking about like the Daredevils, Luke Cage films. And when you look at the Defender series, when they were all fighting together for the first time and they will go, the camera will focus on one set of fighters, then to the next, and then to the next. It reminded me of that. That scene reminded me of just, you know, what Marvel does on Netflix with their TV series.
You mean the same thing that Marvel first did in film with the Avengers?
No, because the Defenders is far worse. Come on, Arnaldo. No, I said the Defenders.
New York fight with the point of view, continuous shot.
Oh.
Where you see
not the slow motion camera angles. Come on.
Hulk smashing, Iron Man is blasting, Cap throwing the shield. Black Widow scissoring, and what's his name? I forget. What's that dude's name? Jeremy Renner, Hawkeye. He's
tossing bows and arrows.
Yeah. Well, that's safe to. It's and it's okay so that you forgot him. He's the most forgettable person in the MCU, so that's fair too. Wow, that didn't even get a rise out of Arnaldo. I thought that would for sure, but anyway. But
anyway, more symbolism with the casino scene, and that'll be my final point. Is that I didn't even realize until I saw Ryan Coogler's Anatomy of the Scene post. That's making the rounds through Vanity Fair, that he costumed Okoye Nakia and T'Challa to represent the colors of the African flag, red, black, and green.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Huh.
Ooh, I didn't notice that. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, I forgot he released that, The Anatomy of the Scene. I think that came out before I saw the movie, so I never went back to it because I'd forgotten about it by then.
I have to look that up.
But yeah, there's so much richness in subtext and symbolism. Like a 1 hour podcast is not gonna.
It's true.
Capture it all.
It's true.
Like, the whole thought of this movie just has me drunk. I'm serious.
Well,
it'll be interesting to see in the future now if everybody's going to take their big African-American project and release it in the month of February. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
If they do that. Because, I mean, last year it was Get Out. This year it was Black Panther. So we'll see.
Even Hidden Figures.
If Denzel and Samuel Jackson in the same movie that comes in February, bat down the hatches.
Even a movie like Hidden Figures, which I know it came out in December, but it really hit its stride in January, February. Well, that wasn't last year, though. Was that 2 years ago? Or was it last year?
Yeah, Hidden Figures was last year with the big three Black nominees.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
And Figures, Fences, and Moonlight, which won.
And it deserved to. Anyway, that's another story. I loved Moonlight. I thought it was great. Well, guys, you're right. Chris, you're absolutely right. An hour-long podcast doesn't do a movie like this even justice because you could literally delve into about a billion different themes. Just incredible subtext to the film. It's really, really great.
We didn't talk about performances. We didn't talk about how great Lupita was. We didn't talk about who Forrest Whitaker was. We didn't talk about how elegant Angela Bassett was playing the role she was born to play.
Yeah.
She's been such a queen mother to so many African American cinematic performances, so it made me proud to see her referenced like that as queen mother. It's like, yep, that's who you are, girl. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So God only knows who they'll cast and what they'll do in the sequel.
Oh, you think there'll be a sequel? I they hadn't greenlit it. I assume there wouldn't be.
You're talking Disney. The same Disney who's got three different Star Wars movie franchises running now.
Oh, let's not talk about that. But yeah.
Please.
No. Well, no, one survivor from the Thanos fight.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fair to say. Yeah, I think Black Panther is going to survive that film.
Maybe out of Avengers 4. If they do kill him. The sound and the writing that you hear is Black Folk in the theater. Nobody did it!
Yeah, I think...
Mark will burn, baby, burn.
$300 million in the first 4 days is pretty good indication there's going to be at least two sequels. I think that's safe. But
yeah, pretty much.
He can be his own MCU. Shoot.
It's true. That's phase four. Phase four is just Black Panther movies, actually, moving on. Oh man, this was great. I really, really love talking about this with you guys. I really appreciate your insight. There's no need to screen it or skip it on this one because, as I said before, for every one of us, it's a see it and see it now. I think I can say that. Speak truth with that.
I'm trying to find time to see it this weekend in IMAX.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see it again, and it's very rare that I say I want to see a movie again, especially one, see it again quickly, and that's how I feel about this film. It is their most important film, I think, in the last 10 years, no question, to me. guys, so thank you so much. I really appreciate talking with you. For those of you at home, a reminder that we will be back in 2 weeks with our next episode, which is, I think, going to be on Annihilation, which I'm sure will be a very, very different film. But and you can look for that interview with director Rob Cohen, which will be available the week after this episode airs. And, of course, if Marvel is your thing, please turn to or look for our Infinity Warm-Up episodes. We are going through each episode of the MCU, and I'm doing it with teenagers. And many of them were very, very young, actually, when the first ones came out. So it's been fun to go and see movies they haven't seen it. So you can look at that.
Question, are you going to do this movie again with them, sis?
Yeah.
Panther is the MCU.
Yes, I am.
It's the one before Avengers Infinity War, so now you got to.
Yeah, I told them that we were going to do it last. You know, we talked about going to see it this week, but we just recorded our episode for Thor: The Dark World, so we're like so far back that I said, look, this will be out on video by the time Infinity War comes out, so we'll make sure we do it then. We're trying to do them in order, so it's been fun though. It's been fun. Some of them were like 5 years old.
The next summer when number 4 drops, buy yourself some time.
That's the funny thing, eh? Is everybody's talking about Infinity War like it's the beginning of the end, but the truth, I guess, it's the beginning of the end, but the real end is next year.
Yeah.
I have to sit through an Ant-Man sequel before we get to Captain Marvel and the next one.
Pretty much.
And as always, you can find us wherever podcasts are available, which is iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and finally Google Play. So there you go, Android users. You can finally be happy with that. And if you go to screenfish.net, go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More so that when you see Black Panther for the second, third, or fourth time, you can have these conversations, maybe some questions to get you started with the people you see it with as well. So lastly, once again, guys, thank you so much for being on. Love chatting with you every time. It's great.
Thank you for having us.
At any time. And for all of you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.